Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Kerry Stevenson. Today, I'm talking with Doug Casey. For those of you that don't know, Doug Casey is the founder of internationalman.com. He's also the author of several books, Crisis Investing in the 90s, and some of my favorite novels. He's written three so far. There'll be seven in the series, but the three that he's written so far that I really urge you to go and buy the physical book or download it on Audible, because it's a great listen, it's a great read. The three are Speculator, Drug Lord, and Assassin. And I loved every one of them. Doug Casey, thanks so much for being with me today. And thanks for joining us at Small Caps.
Pleasure to be here from quiet, backward little Uruguay, where I am.
Yeah, Uruguay, which is an interesting place to be. But the world is interesting. I want to cover a range of things today, Doug, because as the Chinese or somebody once said, we live in very interesting times. We're lurching from one crisis to another, from what I can see sitting down here in Australia. What's Doug Casey doing apart from sitting in Uruguay to make sure that he protects and grows his wealth in these challenging times?
Well, I think the dangers in the financial markets today are absolutely huge, unparalleled in many ways. So you have great financial dangers that are confronting all of us today in the stock market, the bond market, and the real estate market, I've got to say. So that's a huge risk, but an even bigger risk to your personal well-being and financial welfare is political risk. It's a bigger danger than financial risk. Therefore, you want to diversify politically. And I've been to 155 countries. I've lived in 10. Most of my life I've spent in the United States. Fortunate. It was the best time to grow up in the United States, actually. It was wonderful. But you want to have a plan B. And if the going gets tough in your home country, you don't want to be rooted there like a plant. Acting like a plant is not a good survival strategy for a human being. You don't want to act like a medieval peasant where you're afraid to leave the little village where you are. It's a big world out there. So having lived in all these countries, I've made a commitment to Uruguay, which is at least for the moment, and anything can change in the next election, in Latin America especially, but anywhere in the world, actually, as the U.S. proved with the election of the Biden regime, who are active Bolsheviks, actually. You want to be able to diversify, because I think what we're heading towards is something that is as tumultuous as the French Revolution in 1789,
wow,
the Russian Revolution in 1917, or the Maoist Revolution in China. So you want to have a crib outside of your home country. And I chose Uruguay because it is the most stable and quietest country in Latin America. And I like Latin America.
When you say you want to have a crib, so let's take, for example, a lot of the audience that you're talking to today, we live in Australia. It's interesting times down here. Are you saying, you know, you can have a base here, but make sure you've got a base somewhere else? And is that easy to do these days?
Well, you've got to have a certain amount of assets. And of course, that's why it's critical to become as wealthy as possible, to insulate yourself from all the political stupidity, which is endemic all over the world, absolutely everywhere. The whole world is going in the wrong direction. Almost the whole world, I should say. There are a few exceptions I could draw your attention to. You want to ideally, if you can, if you're in a position to do so, and you want to get yourself in that position, you want to have your income in one country, your assets in another, your passport in yet another, and several passports for that matter, because if you've ever looked at your passport, it says it's not your property, it's the property of the government, and they can cancel it at will.
Oh, wow.
So that's why you want to diversify politically.
You talk politics, we talk government. I've always looked at it and thought, especially here in Australia, we have so many different layers of government and public servants. And of course, who pays? The taxpayers pay for all this, these levels of government. Doug, do you think, you said political stupidity, but do you think that we are over-governed? There's too much governance and governments around the world. I'd love your take on that.
Yeah, well, that is the understatement of the decade or the century. Frankly, most government serves no useful purpose. We live in a world of crony government. It used to be in the United States as recently as 1900, which was a while ago. But back then, the federal government in the U.S. took only 3% of the American GDP. Today, the U.S. government controls absolutely everything you do. They monitor everything you do. They tell you everything you can and can't do. And it's the same in Australia. And it's not a question of 3%. It's a question of 50% of everything. So in effect, if a slave is somebody who is taxed 100%, Americans and Aussies and most Westerners are really 50% slaves today. I don't like that idea. I don't approve of slavery.
I don't approve of slavery either, but people seem to have got used to this way of living. I don't know, is there a way that this will change? In other words, will there be a catalyst for change in this, as you have said before, coming Greater Depression? Do you think people might sort of wake up to the fact that government isn't delivering what they should, but is actually taking away more than they should?
Yeah, well, I'm not terribly optimistic because Westerners, certainly including Aussies and Americans, have been totally corrupted by the state. They actually think the state is a cornucopia, a magic cornucopia that can provide things for them for free or at somebody else's expense. And that is morally corrupting. So I'm not optimistic about it. And if we have a real tumult, a real upset, things usually get worse, not better, just as they got worse in France in 1789. They got rid of Louis XIV, very good. But then they got Robespierre, and then they got Napoleon. And the same thing happened in Russia. It was good to get rid of Nicholas II. But then they got Lenin, and after that, they got Stalin. So the problem that we face is that when things really get bad, and they will in the years to come, for many reasons, financial reasons, economic reasons, other reasons we can talk about, what generally happens is that some charismatic character presents himself when chaos arises and says, "Give me power. I will kiss everything and make it better. Trust me, I will," and then you're in for a real wild ride. So once again, this is a reason why you ought to, you know, you ought to have a second country that you can go to insulate yourself from what might happen at home.
You speak about, you know, the coming chaos and things like that that are happening. I noted this week there was a bit of coverage of the fact that in Sri Lanka, which used to be a beautiful place to go, inflation is getting out of control. Social unrest is very much there, and social unrest seems to be spreading a little bit throughout the world, as does inflation. Do you think potentially social unrest and inflation could get out of control very quickly and therefore could cause some massive upsets?
No question about it, because no matter what country you live in, your savings are probably in the local currency. And with 75% of the world's population, they're blocked currencies. They're stuck with kwachas or pulas or dirhams or whatever the worthless currency is. And when that currency starts losing value at 15 or 20% per year, which is to say their food prices and their energy prices are going up, they're really up against the wall. I mean, it becomes dangerous for themselves and their family. They really can't feed themselves. I mean, right now, we're looking at soybeans and wheat and corn at or close to all-time highs. And it could get a lot worse for a lot of reasons that we could talk about. So, yeah, I think that what's going to happen is that you're going to see people rioting all over the world because they're unhappy and they're looking for the government to do something. And of course, it's the nature of the government to do something stupid because it's a coercive institution, government. It doesn't produce anything at all.
No, it brings a lot of money, Doug. It keeps printing because as long as they keep printing it and handing it out, you keep everybody, so I guess the water doesn't boil. Everybody stays at an equilibrium and says, well, the government's there to look after me and there's another $500 here and $1,200 there. But as you said, it's not producing anything. And if you're not producing, we're in trouble.
People have been intellectually and morally corrupted by the welfare state and by government and the ideas of socialism and welfareism. And they've got to recognize that the only product of governments are things like wars, pogroms, persecutions, inflations, regulations, the creation of a crony capitalist class that get close to the people in government and have the government's funding directed towards them. So the institution itself is highly problematic. Let me put it that way. I believe in, there's nothing that can't be done by a free market, people producing and consuming voluntarily. And we'd have a lot less criminality in the world besides, but that's another question. But you know, there are, although almost every country in the world, especially due to recent hysterias that we don't need to talk about, have been going in the wrong direction and taking more power. But just this afternoon on my podcast, Doug Casey's Take, we spent an hour talking to a fund manager in, of all places, Uzbekistan, a place that most people don't even know exists. And we grilled him and interrogated him. The two of us that do my podcast, and he built an excellent case that this obscure little country could be one of the best places to put money at this point as a speculative proposition. It's on a growth curve that's hard to believe for a crazy Stan. I mean, surrounded by Afghanistan, Pakistan, forget about it, Stan. And lots of other places like that. So that's a tip.
Funnily enough, I came across that there are 8 stands in total, Uzbekistan being one of them. But what's are you suggesting that people should have a look at Uzbekistan as a potential place to distribute some of their hard-earned wealth?
Yes, because here's an interesting fact few people will be apprised of. Up until 2016, it was, after North Korea, about the most repressive place in the world. Then things changed almost magically. Things had gotten so bad, they changed magically. Now, the government has privatized almost every industry. On their stock markets, there are 600 publicly traded companies in Uzbekistan. Taxes are very low. Their national currency is deflating, not inflating.
Oh, wow.
I mean, this shocked me. I mean, I took a newsletter from the fund group that has a mutual fund there for a year. And finally, I better interview this guy. And story hung, so I'm putting some money in there. But, that's kind of beyond the pale for most people. I mean, forget about not being able to find Ukraine on the map. Most people can't do. Nobody can find Uzbekistan on the map.
Well, we'll get them to find it.
I like to go places where nobody else is, because the only thing that can happen is that they'll find out that it exists. And, hey, it's actually not that bad. And money starts flowing into it. I expect that's going to happen.
You made a very interesting comment just a moment about Uzbekistan. I mean, well, the whole world, and in fact, the inflationary figures for the US have just come out. Rightly or wrongly, they're saying 8.5%, but you're saying Uzbekistan is deflationary. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. For some reason, which is hard for me to explain as yet, that the central bank is tightening and inflation is dropping there from a currently reported 10% down to 7%, and they're targeting 6%, and they'll probably do it. So totally unlike the United States, where it is written in stone that the government, the US government, is going to have to borrow $1 trillion or $2 trillion per year, all of which those bonds where it's borrowing are sold to our central bank, the Federal Reserve, which credits the government's account at commercial banks. And that is actually the engine of inflation. That's not happening there. So it's a very small market, and it's not something where you can put a lot of money, but I like to make speculative, high potential, and I think relatively low risk bets where everybody thinks it's high risk. But if I see why the market's wrong, I'm happy to bet against the market.
Now, you just went back to the US and talked about the printing of, you know, trillions of dollars. Because they can do that, Doug, does that mean that they can keep kicking the can down the road and therefore the chaos won't ensue? Because it doesn't matter. We'll just increase the balance sheet exponentially over time, and then no one will see that there is actually a bubble. We'll print more money because that's what people expect from us.
I think that game is over. Most people were unaware of the fact that the U.S. has run a trade deficit that's grown and grown and grown over the last 40 years. The major export of the U.S. is not soybeans or Boeings or computers or any of that. Our major export is U.S. dollars, where the U.S. government prints up dollars, and those nice foreigners send us Mercedes and Sonys and cocaine and things like that in exchange for this paper currency. And at some point, people are going to realize, wait a minute, we're holding onto a hot potato in the form of a U.S. government, which is the unsecured liability of a manifestly bankrupt and out of control government. And they're going to start dumping U.S. dollars. And that's when it really is going to get interesting, because when you go to sell, it's a question of to whom? And those dollars are all going to come back to the U.S. buying more real wealth. And inflation will really skyrocket at that point. No, the U.S. government is look, nobody wants to own U.S. government bonds anymore. You get 2% in yield when inflation is running. Forget about the 7.8% that they say. That's a lie. It's a fabrication. It's like believing what the Argentine government tells you. Actual inflation in the U.S. is 15%, moving towards 20% and beyond. So people that are owning that own these 2% bonds, pension funds, insurance companies, they're going to start dumping these bonds wholesale, recognizing that they're hot potatoes that are depreciating rapidly. And where's the money going to go? I think a lot of that money is going to flow into precious metals, both gold and silver. And the companies that mine them, which nobody wants to own today for lots of reasons, but they're wrong again.
A year ago, possibly less, probably the latter half of last year, the talk was the fact that inflation was transitory. Clearly it's not transitory. It's here to stay.
But these central bankers, all of them, not just the Americans, they have high IQs, but they're actually stupid. Why do I say that? I define stupidity as an unwitting tendency to self-destruction. And that's what's going to happen. They're destroying the actual moral and ethical fabric of the U.S. They're destroying the dollars, which are how the average American saves. They're making it impossible for anybody to buy a house and the real estate market itself floats on a sea of debt at very low interest rates. Interest rates are headed back up towards 20% and above, which is going to crater the real estate market. This is, look, we're looking at something of really world historic importance, and we're sleepwalking into it right now. The world is sleepwalking into a real catastrophe. And I'm not talking even about the potential military disasters, which are out there, and something that looks like World War III. And I'm not even talking about nuclear war. I'm talking about the nature of World War III will be biological war. That'll be a major part of it. And cyber war, because the whole world runs on computers. And you destroy the software or the computer systems of the world. And there are a number of ways of doing that. And the militaries of the world are all looking at that, as well as black hat hackers. It's going to be as bad as they're using nuclear weapons, which, of course, it could happen in the Ukraine. They've painted Putin into a corner, and it's really unjustified, quite frankly. I'm not saying Putin's a good guy. I'm not an apologist for Putin. But as usual, it's the U.S. government which has stuck its nose into absolutely everything and created chaos as a result.
On that basis, do you think that there could be a changing world order? We've had the US as the reserve currency of the world. You talk about the potential for the US dollar to be dumped going forward. With Russia aligning with China and some other changes in that, do you think that, I guess, the reserve currency could change? Could we go back to a gold system? Based around what's going on?
Absolutely. Nobody trusts the US dollar, nor should they. Why, up until recently, the Chinese and the Russians, when they traded with each other, used US dollars, the currency of their adversary, all of which clears through the US. That's insane. So the US dollar is being dumped because they realize it's untrustworthy for a number of different reasons. But they don't trust, the Chinese don't trust the ruble, nor should they. And the Russians don't trust the yuan, nor should they. So they're going to wind up using gold. That's why gold has always been used in the past, because it's the only financial asset that's not simultaneously somebody else's liability. Where you don't have to trust the other party. That's a very important thing in a chaotic world. And we're heading into a really chaotic world for lots of reasons now.
My beautiful community out there, the majority of them are investors. They're very smart. They're very awake to what's going on. A lot of them are diversified. But do you think with chaos and the chaos that you're talking about coming, that diversification, is it the key or is it the problem? In other words, should they be in real estate and the stock market, or should they be looking at gold? How do we protect but also grow our wealth and in these uncertain and chaotic times? What's Doug doing?
Well, it was said by an old friend of mine, now deceased, Richard Russell, and he said, in a depression, everybody loses. The winner is just the person that loses the least. And this is going to be the greater depression. But most of the real wealth in the world will still exist. It's just going to change ownership. And it's very hard to be a saver today, unless you save in gold and silver, which you should. It's very hard to be an investor. An investor, incidentally, should be defined as somebody who allocates a unit of capital in order to create more units of capital, like planting an ear of corn to get a field of corn, that type of thing. Very hard to do that in a chaotic world. So we're forced to become speculators. But most people don't understand rational speculation. They're not very good at it, and they're going to do it out of desperation. So they're going to lose. But you're going to have to start thinking more like a speculator. That's what you have to do in a chaotic time.
What do you mean by a rational speculator? What is a rational speculator? I thought speculators were potentially irrational because they are speculating, not investing.
No. That People confuse speculation with gambling. They're two totally different things. Gambling is where you place a bet and random chance, guided by absolutely nothing, means you win or you lose. Well, yeah, sure. You can put it on red and the roulette wheel will come up red once in a while. That's fine. A speculator is one who positions himself to take advantage of politically caused distortions in the marketplace. That's what a speculator does. Very different from a gambler. And the fact is that most people don't understand the difference, which is not going to inure to their financial well-being in the future. And the more powerful and the more desperate world governments become, the more opportunities they're going to create for speculators. Now, over the last few decades, they've printed up, all the world's governments have printed up trillions and trillions and trillions of currency units to give us an artificial sense of prosperity. It's like if all the world governments put $100,000 in everybody's bank account tonight. Tomorrow morning, you say, hey, I got $100,000 more. I'm going to go out and buy a Ferrari, which just means everybody's living above their means in a fool's paradise. That's what's been going on. So what I'm saying is this. This type of thing has been going on now for decades. The game is held together. Thank you. But I think we're in for a catastrophic collapse of the bond market, much higher interest rates. That's going to spill over into the stock market, both from fundamental earnings point of view and just the value of the securities themselves. Stock market could crash. And nobody wants to own or touch gold stocks today. The producers are coining money with all-in sustaining costs of $1,000 industry-wide. As much as fund managers have been trained like chimpanzees to hate gold stocks, they're going to buy them. And it's such a tiny little, teeny weeny little market. A little bit of buying is going to send it to the moon. And I would say that's also true, even more true, with uranium stocks. And it's also true with oil stocks. I'm not talking about the big, stupid companies like BP and Shell, which have announced, their idiot managements have announced them getting out of the oil business. I mean, where do they come up with it? Where do they come up with these empty suits that rise to the top of these corporations, mainly by schmoozing and backstabbing and backslapping and getting to know government officials? I think the medium-sized oil companies that are still run by entrepreneurs are going to get a lot of buying. So that's where I am, generally speaking. And of course, oddball speculations, like I mentioned, the Uzbek stocks, which, you know, forget I mentioned that for the purposes of most people. It's just something I'm doing. You know,
I think Doug's doing, it's not something that, you know, it's a little bit out there, but it's interesting. I'm certainly going to start to look at Uzbekistan. But you mentioned uranium, Doug. Is that, for a lot of people, it had a bit of a run. Obviously, a lot of the explorers and even the ones, developers, the producers, they've got to have a uranium price probably above 60, 65 to be economic. And right now it's not quite there. No. Do you think with all this sort of we need to have zero carbon emissions and that's what uranium is, do you think that the narrative is going to change and that uranium will become an energy supplier in a greater way in the future? And is that why you're
interested? Yes, because from a purely technical point of view, it is the safest, it is the cheapest, and it is the cleanest form of mass power generation. Nothing against windmills and solar. They have applications in certain places, like remote app places or really sunny places, places like things like that. But it's not for an industrial society, mass power generation. So the world is going to go to nuclear. China and India are going nuclear in a massive way. I think the whole world is going to go nuclear, and there's going to be a big demand for uranium, and then hopefully later on for thorium, but there's no way to play that right now. So I'm very long uranium stocks.
But what do you say to those people out there that say, oh, uranium, it's going to kill us. Like the narrative has to change, and it hasn't yet. There is still a great swathe of people out there that are very much trying to change people's thinking on it and saying it's just far too dangerous. What do you think is going to change that so it becomes a common energy source?
People that say that are, I don't want to insult anybody, but they're really technologically just ignorant or even stupid. Look, nuclear power plants today are basically using the same designs from 50 years ago because it's so politically incorrect. In the near future, we should and can be and will be using self-contained nuclear devices, not dissimilar from those on nuclear submarines, that will be self-contained and hermetically sealed and generating huge amounts of power, small devices. That's the ultimate future. But government and worldwide hysteria has kept that from being developed. So, but even conventional power plants, there are going to be scores of them built in the future. They're going to run on uranium. So, I'm very comfortable owning uranium. And I speculate in individual uranium producers and explorers. But there are a couple of royalty companies that buy royalties, these things. And royalty companies, and this goes for gold too, actually, and copper as well. There are royalty companies that simply collect 0.5% or 1 or 2% of the gross revenues of mines. I mean, it's like a foolproof business where you can have income of scores or hundreds of millions of dollars per year with a total staff of like 15 people to basically put the coupons. Most people are completely unaware of these royalty companies. That's the safest way to play these things.
Actually, we've got one down here in Australia. I'm not promoting this at all, ladies and gentlemen. Do your own research. But we've got one down here, Emerson Resources. They've just done a deal where they've got a 6% royalty once the mine is developed up in the Northern Territory. So I wonder if more companies in gold mining and potentially silver will be doing that in the future.
Well, there used to be just one gold royalty company founded and run by a friend of mine, a couple of friends of mine, actually, Franco-Nevada. Mm-hmm. And now they're traded in North America anyway. There are a dozen of them, and they're all interesting, but some are better than others. But the royalty space is good, and it's going to get better. And of course, at some point, it's going to get too popular, and then people will pay too much for crappy royalties. It's the usual thing that always happens with markets, at which point I hope to unload my gold royalty companies, but my gold stocks in general. And I look forward to the day when I can sell them and buy Berkshire Hathaway, hopefully at lower levels than it is today.
But right now, you think we're at the start, I guess, at the beginning of a potential run in these areas that you like: oil, uranium, precious metals. You think that this is a contrarian investment that people are not watching at the moment because they're too busy watching potentially, I guess, the tech stocks and other things like that.
Forget about the tech stocks; they're too popular. That's what these complete newbies are. Robinhood, which has opened up millions of accounts, they're buying tech stocks. They don't know what they're doing. They're going to lose all their money. No, you buy oil stocks because, as I don't know if I said it before in this interview, because I've as we did, but back at the peak of the oil stock boom a long time ago, 1980, the S&P 500 was 35% oil and oil-related stocks. Today, it's 3.5%. Okay, so you want oil companies, small ones.
Sorry to interrupt you, Doug. So you're saying that back in the day, it was 35% of the S&P was oil companies, and today it's 3%. Is that because people are saying that oil is irrelevant these days? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, of course. The politically correct types say, oh, it's dirty, it's carbon emitting. And of course, this whole carbon thing is a complete pile of crap. It's all nonsense. It really is. It's one more hysteria where all people know, it's like all people know about anything is what they hear some talking head on television say in a 2-minute blurb. And they believe it because they think everybody else believes it. But look, you run with the crowd, you're going to get trampled. So buy junior oil stocks, not the big ones, because the big ones are run like the government. They're actually arms of the government. And not even the big gold stocks. I buy the secondary ones that are mining a few hundred thousand or a million ounces per year, and they're coining money now. But fund managers aren't interested and don't buy. Why? Because they've all been educated in Keynesian economics. They think gold is a pet rock. They think that because of ESG and all this type of thing, oh, dirty industry playing in the dirt, don't want to own that, can't put it in your portfolio because the greenies will raise hell about owning stocks like that are non-PC. So look, I don't like to run with the crowd. We'll see if I'm right or wrong in a couple of years. It's been good to me so far.
Well, I think it's been very good to you so far. I want to understand your reasoning for uranium, oil, precious metals. What do you think is going to be the catalyst? Because we've been going down this road, Doug, for quite some time, with governments getting bigger and bigger and printing more and more of the funny money, as I call it. And it goes on. What I want to know is you're looking at uranium, oil, and precious metals, which right now are going okay, but not getting that interesting. They're sort of running along nicely. What's going to be the catalyst, do you think, that is going to make the change for, as you have said in the past, higher interest rates, a bit more chaos, and people really need to understand that the world is changing? But I want to know, it hasn't changed so far. People have been talking about it, as you have, for some time. Why now, or why in a couple of years' time? What's your view?
There's going to be a shortage of oil, I think, and natural gas, because most of the governments in the world, certainly the U.S. government, which is kind of leading the charge, are extremely anti carbon-emitting things like oil and coal. It's in the same class. So as the prices of these things go higher and there are shortages and people can't afford them, they're going to have to change their tune and they're going to be begging entrepreneurs to drill and produce all of these things. And of course, gold, as I said, I think that gold is going to be used as money. Again, ideally in day-to-day commerce, the way it was before the 1930s in the West and the world actually, but certainly between governments because they don't trust each other. They don't want to use each other's currencies. So,
but aren't they coming up with a digital currency that they can, I mean, we've got Bitcoin. Why do we need gold if we've got Bitcoin? That's a comment that's been said to me a couple of times.
Well, and I'm a big fan of Bitcoin for lots of reasons. It's also there's a separate discussion. It's actually a very viable money, and we could talk about why it's a viable money. But you talked about central bank digital currencies. These things are going to be the kiss of death to freedom of the average person. Your currency is all on your computer, not even paper, which is private and discreet, and you can have it in your own hand. If it's all on your computer, run by the central bank, they can credit or debit your account any way that they want. Or if you're a naughty person, as Canadian truckers have found recently, among others, they can block it off to punish you. So you don't want to touch a central bank digital currency with a 10-foot pole. They are antithetical to all concepts of personal freedom and privacy. It's going to further centralize power in the hands of the state and the kind of people that go to work for the state, which incidentally are not the best and brightest people. You've got two kinds of people in the world. People that like to deal in creating things, making things, physical things. And you've got people that like to control other people and manipulate other people. And guess which type always go into politics? They're glib, and they tell you all kinds of lies, like they're the cornucopia. But digital currencies should be decried and not used and not adopted by the average person.
But the average person doesn't realize that they're losing freedom and that this is more control. The average person just looks at it as, well, that makes my life a bit easier. It's so much easier for me to move things around. And they don't really, and I've had this said to me, Doug, I have nothing to hide, so why do I care?
That's really that is so stupid. It makes me pessimistic for the future of the human race, especially during the chaotic times coming up. It's a real problem, Carrie. It really is. We've had for a couple of generations, young people have been indoctrinated absolutely in college. The university system's totally been captured by Marxists of one type or another, and it's filtered down to the high school system and the grade school system. And the media believes this, and entertainers and sports figures and these corporate people. And what this all boils down to is because of this, this is why the rich are getting richer, which in fact they are, and the poor are getting poorer. The little guy always gets screwed, and that's going to happen in spades in the years to come, because the little guy doesn't take responsibility for his own life. He really believes that the powers that be are doing the right thing and acting in his interest. They're not. There's X number of thousands of people in the world that are really rich and really politically powerful, and they all know each other. And it's not like a conspiracy, but they have the same interests and they work together and they believe the same things and go to the same clubs. And they're your enemy, actually.
So how does the little person, the average Joe, protect themselves and understand what they need to do? We're not talking about that, because you just said the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, the middle class are disappearing. I'll say that. You didn't say that, but I'm saying the middle class are disappearing. How do those people that are getting poorer and poorer try and get themselves lifted above? They don't see any hope.
I think while it's still possible, you've got to redouble your efforts. Work harder, produce more than you consume, and save the difference. But don't save it in the form of fiat currencies. Save it in the form of gold and silver coins, and learn to speculate. Because as I said, it's getting harder and harder to make intelligent investments, and you're going to be forced to speculate as the markets go up and down like an elevator with a lunatic at the controls. Because in fact, we do have lunatics at the controls of governments and central banks. So you have to defend yourself. Don't count on anybody else. Sad story, hate to say it, but that's the way it is. That's the way the world is structured today. And it's getting worse. The trend is still in motion. And trends stay in motion until they reach a crisis. And when they reach a crisis, that's when bad things happen, like the French Revolution and the Russian Revolution and the Chinese Revolution and just a bunch of others.
So we're due for another revolution, and potentially the Russia-Ukraine issue is just the start.
Oh, it is. And look, even the United States, it's a different country. It's a different country than the one that I grew up in. In fact, Let me stick my neck out further, and people are going to say, oh, this is ridiculous. What are you doing with this crazy guy on your show? I wouldn't doubt that, because the red people and the blue people in the U.S., they actually have come to hate each other. They can't talk to each other. They despise each other. And I'm not kidding. This is endemic across the U.S. at this point. I would not doubt that in the U.S., we're going to have active secession movements and it might actually wind up in a civil war in the US. And there are a lot of countries in the world that are completely artificial, that are on their way to breaking up, which includes almost every country in Africa, which are completely artificial constructs with different tribes, different languages. And, you know, the governments in Africa are basically just scams to steal. Same thing in Central Asia, same thing everywhere. Even big countries like Brazil should break up, and probably will, into at least two countries. They're southern Brazil and northern Brazil are so ethnically and economically different. Now, this is going to happen all over the world. You've seen secession movements springing up in Europe, things like Venice region and the Basque region and Catalonia and Spain, you know, Scotland splitting off from the UK, which would be a good thing and I think will happen. So I think that's the way the world is. Globalism, thank God, is dying, actually. Yeah. They've overplayed their hand.
Yeah. All right, Doug Casey, I would like to ask you one final thing. For my community out there, how would you summarize what they need to wake up and do right now? You said work hard, save, but don't save in fiat currency, save in silver coins and gold coins. Is that the summation?
Educate yourself. Recognize that the world is going to change radically in the next decade. It's going to change as much in the next decade as it did in the 1930s. Actually, I think it's going to change as much as it has any time since the Industrial Revolution. So,
buckle up. Point,
I wouldn't particularly want to live in a major city. I'd rather have a small holding, you know, out in the country for a lot of reasons. Hold on to your head. Don't send your kids to state schools where they'll be indoctrinated and pick up all kinds of false values. If you love your kids, educate them yourself. If you don't think you know how to do it, learn how to do it. You'll get an education yourself. And there's lots of things you can do.
Doug Casey, has been an absolute pleasure. For more commentary from Doug, please go to internationalman.com, where he does a lot of his own writing. He's got some brilliant writers as well. Don't forget his podcast. It's called Take on YouTube.
Doug Casey's Take.
Sorry?
Doug Casey's Take on YouTube.
Didn't I say that?
You said Take.
Doug Casey's Take on YouTube. Doug Casey's Take on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe.
I don't know why. Carrie, I wonder why I even do those things, because, you know, there's zero money in it for me. I guess I see it as being good karma to say these things, but maybe I shouldn't do it because it'll just get me in more trouble with the powers that be. I'll become recognized as an enemy of the state, and that's an uncomfortable position to be in.
Well, Doug, I think we need more critical thinkers in this world, such as yourself. I, for one, really appreciate the writings that you do, the time that you spend to talk to people like us in our community, and we need more debate, more critical thinking. So I really thank you for your time today here on our Small Caps channel, and I hope we chat to you again, hopefully when it's not too chaotic down the road. Thanks so much, Doug.
Thanks, Carrie.